If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
That's what I'm talking about. Morning, everyone. You know, I took a little bit of time last night and pulled apart my AR-15 to clean it. I haven't given it a good full-on take it apart and clean it. It's been nothing more than a field cleaning for a little while. So I took it apart and cleaned it. And probably the number one single biggest nemesis to a gun like an AR is the carbon buildup. And again, carbon is what's left over after the powder is burned. It's like the ashes from the powder. And of course, as I've discussed many times, the AR-15 was designed to run with a powder, a gunpowder, a smokeless powder, that burned clean and left no carbon residue. Well, that didn't happen, and that's not what we're shooting. Unless you're lucky enough to find some of that WinClean ammo, which is quite expensive, but that actually keeps the gun much, much cleaner. Anyhow, to find a gun cleaner that actually literally wipes away carbon is very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. And there's parts like if you have ever taken apart an AR-15 and you have the bolt, not the bolt assembly, but the actual smaller piece, the bolt itself, the back of the bolt where a lot of the gases heat up, you get some of the carbon buildup and then you get hot gases with it. It literally almost crusts this carbon buildup onto the back of the bolt. It's difficult to get off. Oftentimes, you need a wire wheel. As a matter of fact, my favorite thing to clean that off is a bench grinder that has a wire brush attached to it, and that just cleans it right off. It's not going to harm the hardened metal, especially if you go with the Ronin series and you have a bolt that's either tin or you have one that's nickel. Hard chromed, which mine is. I have the hard chromed setup for the Ronin. So I didn't have that. I use M-Pro 7 quite a bit. As a matter of fact, I have one of those, it's like a 5-gallon parts washer. And in my laundry room is very big. My laundry room is the size of a small bedroom. And I end up with a large counter with cabinets in it that I keep all of my gear and stuff in. And on the top, I cut out and I countersunk one of these 5-gallon parts washers. And I keep it filled with M-Pro 7, which is, again, it's an excellent, excellent cleaner for carbon. Helps that stuff just melt away. And I have a basket. I put every part in the basket, spray it down, keep the sprayer on, and stuff it in there so it really has some agitation going. Still, I end up with this carbon buildup on the back of the bolt. As it turns out, one of the guys that's a buddy and listener to the Dave Champion Show, a guy by the name of Michael, I don't know his last name. Dave didn't tell me. I didn't bother to ask. But he made this stuff, and he sent it in a couple of these little bottles, like these 2-ounce bottles. It looks like a recycled 5-hour energy bottle, and it says Michael's Gun Cleaner or something, Michael's Gun Cleaning Formula. And that stuff, it smells very, very similar to Hoppies, very reminiscent of Hoppies. However, it's not. There's obviously some other scents to it. And that stuff wiped away carbon wonderfully, wonderfully. I used the M-Pro 7 on some of the stuff, and I used this other stuff that Michael made, and it worked wonderfully. Very good stuff. And then when I was done cleaning up the gun, I lubed it with my Silver Bullet gun oil, the one-shot, one-soul gun oil that ends up with 13% liquefied USDA pig fat. So that's what my gun is now lubed with. I'll be going out and testing that thing. The plan is a little after the show. Stay tuned, guys. More to come.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
So yesterday at the Supreme Court, the much-awaited, much-anticipated oral arguments in McDonald versus Chicago, challenging Chicago's draconian gun ban, outright ban on handguns, outright, flat-out, absolutely no guns allowed in the city of Chicago, and I also believe the suburb of Oak Park. None. So that went to the Supreme Court. They heard oral arguments yesterday. Now, what did the Supreme Court justices think of this gun ban? Does a ban on guns constitute a reasonable regulation? Well, Mayor Richard Daley of Chicago, he sure thinks so. He says, we have the right. Now, he says the right. And in fact, as a government organization, as the city council and the mayor, there are no rights. There are only power and authority. So you can already tell in the fourth word of his statement, we have the right. We as the city council governing body of Chicago. He says, we have the right for health and safety to pass reasonable laws dealing with the protection and health of the people of the city of Chicago. So he's already off base because they don't have any rights. They have power and authority. No rights at all. Rights are much, much more powerful than power and authority. And groups, organizations don't have them. Individuals do. Despite the push by Chicago to make McDonald versus City Chicago about crime, a majority of the Supreme Court today appeared to want nothing to do with that argument. Now, Justice Anthony Kennedy described the right of self-defense as being as fundamental as the right to freedom of speech. The question the court faces is how many of Chicago's regulations beyond the ban should survive. Now, 2 years ago, Supreme Court said a ban wasn't a reasonable regulation when it came to regulations that the federal government can impose, and that there was an individual right guaranteed by the Second Amendment to individuals allowing them to own handguns for self-defense. They also ruled that people's guns cannot be required to be locked up and unloaded, since that would make it difficult, if not impossible, for people to use them for self-defense. Now, the question that the Supreme Court addressed yesterday in oral arguments is whether the same reasoning can be applied to state and city regulations. Well, duh. The Bill of Rights was originally passed to make clear that there were limits on what the federal government could do. Keep that in mind. The Bill of Rights did not establish any rights whatsoever. What it established was limits to the federal government. And everything spelled out in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, are not the only rights that we have. They're merely a top 10 list. So important was the right to keep and bear arms, it came in number 2. After the first one of being able to worship your God and say what you have to say and peaceably assemble. All right? So, it was clear only after the Civil War that folks in Congress passed the 14th Amendment to apply those same restrictions to states to protect citizens' freedom. Even more important, much of the congressional debate focused on stopping southern states from banning newly freed black slaves from owning guns. Now, while much of the Bill of Rights has been incorporated, is the term, to apply to the states through the 14th Amendment, so far the Supreme Court has not explicitly applied this to the Second Amendment, which is ridiculous in my book. The Founding Fathers would be rolling over in their graves to think that the 14th Amendment somehow wiped out the first 10, the Bill of Rights, unless the Supreme Court goes and rules on it. It's hard to believe that the court believes that part or all of the 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 8th Amendments apply to the states as part of the Bill of Rights that have so reached the Supreme Court on this issue, but somehow not the 2nd Amendment. It's this constitutional issue that's before the Supreme Court right now in this case. Not whether gun control would be an expedient way to cut down on crime. Nevertheless, it's hard for anybody, including Supreme Court justices, to ignore safety questions. Obviously, this is a latter issue to the Mayor Daley and City Chicago hopes for courts, for the court to focus on. Indeed, James Feldman, an attorney defending the Chicago handgun ban, repeatedly tried to argue that Chicago's law was needed to cut down on murder and suicide. Right. One of the most violent cities in all of America, just like Washington, D.C., because of these gun bans. Now, the crime rate in D.C. has dropped in the last couple of years. Has it been about 19 months since the Heller decision? It's dropped notably. Gun control is often framed as a trade-off between freedom and safety. Right? But research shows that freedom and safety go together. If there are any doubts about this, we can simply look at the District of Columbia and its huge 25% drop in the murder rate the year after the Heller decision. Much of that drop was undoubtedly due to the court striking down the gun lock requirement on rifles and shotguns, pretty much since Washington continued making it difficult for people to even register handguns. But Chicago doesn't need to look beyond its own immediate neighborhood for evidence. The figures will show that the towns and cities around Chicago in the suburb area have much lower violent crime rates than the city of Chicago does itself. In the 5 years before Chicago's ban, the murder rate fell by 28% relative to those counties around them. Now, that's crime levels that go back. They only recorded back to 1977. This ban went into effect in 1982. In the 5 years after the ban, Chicago's murder rate doubled relative to those other counties. It had been dropping, then it doubled. The patterns are also very similar when Chicago or Washington's murder rates are compared to other large cities in the U.S. as a whole, where gun laws are much less strict. So, let's talk a little bit about just that particular set of gun laws, handgun bans, in Chicago. Three family members just outside of Chicago were killed in a home invasion this last weekend. Three people were found fatally shot inside their house after an apparent home invasion just outside of Chicago Tuesday morning. I'm sorry, they were identified Tuesday morning. Police said the victims were Jeffrey Kramer, Lori Kramer, and their son Michael Kramer, 50, 48, and 20 respectively. Police also said three other people were inside the home at the time of the shooting, a daughter, a son, and another woman whose relationship to the family is not yet clear. At 3 a.m., police received a call from the daughter, who is believed to be in her early 20s, inside the house. She was hiding upstairs and told police she heard a suspicious noise or shots fired in the home in the Terra Hills subdivision, according to the police chief. Police found a woman and two men fatally shot in the house where they all lived, according to the police. The three who survived the attack were being interviewed by the police and contacting other family members. Jeffrey Kramer owns a towing company, but police have no information about whether the family business may have somehow been involved in the shooting. The incident was an apparent home invasion, according to the police, who said no one, including the person who called the police, witnessed the attack, although they were inside the house. Although a suspect is not in custody, police do not consider it a threat to anyone else. Exactly. They don't have any idea who did this, but they're saying, we don't consider them to be a threat to anyone else. Now, what kind of garbage is that? The cop's saying, look, three people were murdered in a house full of six. Somebody did it. We have no idea who, but we don't believe them to be any further threat. They say, we are trying to figure out who we're looking for. It wasn't a random thing. It was a targeted thing. The deputy chief, that's the one who said that, he did not know immediately if there's anything taken from the home. Okay. Let me tell you something, guys. If someone is of the ilk to invade a home at 3 a.m. and commit multiple homicide, they are a threat to society. If they're going to plan out that one, if they're going to plan out the one that you just witnessed, they are fully capable of doing more, especially if that one was successful and they got away with it, you knuckleheads. How could you possibly say, no, don't worry about it. Sorry. I'll tell you how. Because the police are under no particular legal obligation to have to provide police protection to any individual citizen, says the Supreme Court back in the 80s. That is the myth of police protection. There isn't any. That is why McDonald versus Chicago was argued in front of the Supreme Court. Because the city of Chicago believes they should be able to provide protection to the citizens of Chicago. They're under no legal obligation to have to do that. And if you ask any cop, and I mean any cop, there's about 100 to 150,000, about 150,000 in the United States alone. Ask all 150,000. Get a 100% complete poll. Do they believe they do a proper job at preventing crime and protecting the citizens? Or are they more often arriving at the scene of a crime after it already happened? What's much more likely to happen? And percentage-wise, what in actuality generally happens much more than the other? Well, it ain't preventing crime and offering protection. It's taking reports and cleaning up the mess after a crime has been committed. Stay tuned. Plenty more about this story when we return.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys. So in the Heller case, the same justices that appeared, that struck down the Heller, the Washington, D.C. ban on Heller, they appeared poised to strike down the very strict state and local gun bans that are very similar to those in Heller. Okay. During the highly anticipated oral arguments yesterday, the same justices who eliminated the District of Columbia's near total handgun ban prohibition back in 2008 in the Heller decision, they suggested strongly that they thought that the Chicago handgun ban was equally incompatible with the Second Amendment. Now, Justice Antonin Scalia is the one who wrote the majority opinion in Heller, and he said, the right to keep and bear arms is right there. It's right there in the Bill of Rights, end quote. He said that to the opposing counsel, to the counsel arguing for Chicago to keep the handgun bans. Again, he says, quote, the right to keep and bear arms is right there. It's right there in the Bill of Rights. As if to say, stupid, and then bash him in the back of the head with a book containing, in large print, the entire constitutional text. In this case, the court's eventual reasoning could matter just as much as the actual final result. The justice indicated Tuesday that they were likely to apply the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to extend to gun ownership rights. A more aggressive alternative would be to overturn an 1873 precedent that had gutted part of the 14th Amendment in the Supreme Court. Doing that, though, would have far-reaching consequences for rights and laws that have nothing to do with gun ownership. Now, it's a heavy burden for you to suggest that we ought to overrule that 1873 decision, said Chief Justice John Roberts, as he told one of the two attorneys who were arguing on behalf of gun owners. One of them was one of the chief counsels for the NRA. Scalia and Roberts were part of the 5-4 majority that struck down Washington's gun ban in 2008 in the Heller decision. The landmark District of Columbia versus Heller decision was the first time the court ruled that the Second Amendment's right to bear arms extended to individuals and not just formal militias. The Second Amendment says that, quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, the 2008 decision was limited according to some of these cities and states, to federal jurisdictions. Because, they rationalize, the first 10 amendments that make up the Bill of Rights covers only the federal government. Not true. Finding that gun ownership is an individual right makes it harder, but if not impossible, for the federal government to impose gun restrictions. Certain laws, such as those that ban gun ownership by former felons, might still survive. They probably will, because the court was very clear about that in the Heller decision. Something tells me that this decision is going to come out in the favor of gun owners. It's going to mirror Heller, and quite possibly, this is my prediction. Drum roll, please. Drum roll? Okay, no drum roll. Imagine the drum rolling. My prediction is the justices, the same five justices that ruled in favor of Heller, will rule in favor here, if not maybe an additional one. And something tells me that because they were quite clear in Heller, and some states and cities decided, you know what, we're going to hide behind the incorporation clause of the Second Amendment, because it hasn't specifically been read, that Heller doesn't apply to the states, just federal territories. Something tells me that that's going to piss the justices off, and they may very well take the same opinion they had in Heller and expand it even further. Something tells me, whatever the ruling is, it's going to be abundantly clear. Now, it's still going to be up to the political process, Chief Justice Roberts stressed, when it comes to any sort of gun bans. It's going to have to go through a process. If somebody interprets whatever decision they make, and they interpret someone incorrectly, they'll have to go through the process and be ruled on again. Pardon me. However, it's probably going to be one of these deals where this decision is going to go for gun owners. It's probably going to be very clear, and it's going to limit that process from ever happening, as in the type of laws that are even going to be considered because of the decision. Underscoring the issue's political visibility, lawmakers, including Senator George Lemieux of Florida and Max Baucus of Montana, were there and observed the proceedings. Now, I have to tell you one thing that's interesting. A lot of lawmakers in the House and Senate signed onto a brief asking the court to protect the Second Amendment and strike down the law. One of those names, which might be surprising to you, not too surprising to me, is Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada, big-time dirtbag Democrat. However, he does not toe the party line on gun control. Never has, and at this point in time, shows that he will not. So, one good thing he did. Thank you, Harry. Stay tuned, guys. More to come.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
By dictators since 1917. The 2A radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, we're going to take just a moment to step back from Second Amendment stuff just for this short 6.5 minute segment, and then we'll get back into it because I'm excited tonight. I am having my first barbecue of the year. I've got, 8 or 10 friends coming. And we're going to be doing this grill-off. A buddy of mine by the name of Dave. Not Dave Champion, another Dave. However, Dave Champion is coming. Another buddy of mine named Dave is doing his version. He does an awesome pork spare rib. So he's handling the pork spare ribs. I am handling the big brontosaurus-sized beef ribs. Now, a lot of people don't much care for beef ribs. They don't seem to, you know, get the flavor and texture. They're, you know, kind of chewy. Feels like you're eating steak off the bone. Not mine. Let me tell you. I am making my, and I know I pronounce this funny because it sounds funny, my Hawaiian beef ribs. These are awesome. Right now, I've had them in the oven for, let's see, since about 3 or 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and they'll remain in the oven until about noontime. All right? So this is my 20-hour in the oven deal. I have four bottles of Belgian white beer in the bottom of a huge pan. I have four racks of ribs. And they're not the full racks. They're like, you know, the half racks. So about two full racks of these beef ribs. I have a very special barbecue sauce that I make that's kind of a Hawaiian-style barbecue sauce with some pineapple and orange flavors in there. A little bit sweet, a little bit spicy, and a little bit smoky. That's in the mixture of beer, as well as some orange marmalade, which you would normally use the sort of thing to like make duck à l'orange. I always keep some of that around. I love duck. I don't always à l'orange it, so I keep some of those packets around. And then the rest was filled with water, and it's simmering in the oven 170 degrees. And it will stay in there until noon. All right, so I'll have 20 hours in the oven. Then, at noontime, that stuff's going to come out. I'm going to say roughly noon, because after the show, I'm going to go shooting. So, that stuff is going to come. You know what? We're in the longer segment, so I guess I better get through this pretty quick. I'm going to take all of those ribs out, and I'm going to pat dry them. Of course, before I put them in, I put a rub on them, a dry rub. As a matter of fact, the dry rub I used, and you're going to love this, when you buy something from LaRue Tactical in Texas, they send you what they call their armadillo rub, which is excellent. My ribs are based with LaRue Tactical's armadillo rub. So they're going to come out of the oven, rinse them off a little bit, pat them dry, clean out that tray, and they're going to go back into the refrigerator to cool off with nothing else on them. What's going to happen is the pores of the meat are going to close in. And then when everybody starts coming over around 6 o'clock tonight or so, after everybody gets there, starts drinking their beer, I'm going to take the ribs out and I'm going to fire up my grill. Now, I am a grilling and smoking fool. I own 2 grills and 3 smokers. They're all on my back patio. And usually when I'm out there working them, I have one of the 6 coolers that are on my back patio filled with ice and beer for the chef. That's me. So I'll be picking up a little ice and beer on the way home. Actually, just ice. I have a few beers at home. So I'm going to fire up my grill. I'm going to use because the ribs are already cooked, I'm just going to use the gas grill. I'm not going to go with the charcoal grill. I don't need to add any flavor. The flavor's already in there in the marinade the way it's been cooking. With the cool ribs, pores already closed, I'm going to take some of my homemade Hawaiian barbecue sauce, and I'm going to brush that onto the ribs, and then I'm going to put them on the grill. And I'm going to put them bone side down so that the indirect heat will open the meat up and that barbecue sauce will start to seep into the pores that are opening. Then, once that's happened, I turn the ribs over and I sear that into the front just a little bit on a very light, on a low grill. Just going to sear that in a little bit. And I will be lucky to get those ribs off the grill because the bones are just going to fall right off. All right. That on top of the potato salad that I made, which is kind of an adaptation of a combination of a potato salad that Rachel Ray has on the Food Network and one that comes from, what's that other lady that's from Georgia, white hair, bigger, older, awesome stuff. Wow. Why can't I remember her name? You guys know who I'm talking about. She's awesome. Anyhow, kind of a combination of their 2 potato salads with a little bit of my own stuff in there. And it's awesome. It's a bacon mustard potato salad is what it is. Now, my buddy Dave and his lovely wife, Paula Dean. Thank you. Paula Dean is the other one. And I have to thank Carrie in the control booth for shooting me that message on Skype. Very well. Paula Dean and Rachel Ray combination. That's got to be an awesome potato salad. Anyhow, and it is because I made it last night and I, of course, had to sample it. Any good cook does. I'm a little bit overweight, and that's because I cook well. So, anyhow, on top of that, we've got Dave and his lovely wife, Pam, coming over, and they are making homemade baked beans and the pork ribs. And that's going to constitute the majority of the meal. That and beer. One of the reasons I love entertaining at my house, it's a great house to entertain. It's big. It's open. I got a great big old tournament-sized pool table. I got a big dining room that seats 8 at the table and 4 more at the counter. I mean, I can bring over a fair amount of people, and I don't have to go anywhere. So, there you go. I'm really looking forward to this. I absolutely end up jonesing for grilling and barbecuing. Absolutely jones for it. It's awesome. I love it. Okay. Now that my stomach is gurgling just because I'm so hungry for this stuff. It cannot come soon enough. After I leave the show today, I'm going to pick up a couple of things. Then I'm going to go out and I'm going to go shooting. Probably going to take my daughter with me. My eldest daughter is hanging out for a few days out at the house. I wanted her to be out for the first barbecue of the season to help christen off everything. It's been very nice weather recently. And so she's out for a few days, probably going to go shooting with her dad. She is a Glock fan. Matter of fact, my Glock 17 is actually now her Glock 17. We're going to go out, do a little bit of shooting, re-sight in my AR. I cleaned it and lubed it, and I got a new one-piece mount by GG&G for the ACOG scope. So I'm going to confirm sight in with the iron sight to put the... Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the ACOG on there and sight it in. Then I'm going to take it off and confirm iron sights. Then I'm going to put the ACOG back on and confirm that it's a true return to zero. Pardon me. Then I'm going to take my 308, my hunting 308, which I recently had threaded for the can. I'm going to sight it back in, put the can on it, and then sight in where it hits with the can on. So I'm going to have a little bit of fun experimentation and see how the gun runs. Yeah, especially the AR with the silver bullet gun oil. I'm really looking forward to that. Okay, back to McDonald Chicago case at the Supreme Court. Now, in the case heard yesterday, McDonald versus City of Chicago, the court needs to decide whether the Second Amendment extends to states and local governments. Chicago's ban is essentially as strict as Washington, D.C.'s ban was, permitting handgun ownership only by licensed private detectives and the holder of handgun licenses. Now, here's a quote. Firearms, unlike anything else protected in the Bill of Rights, are designed to injure and kill. End quote. That was by James Feldman, Chicago's Special Assistant Corporation Counsel, as he told the court yesterday, adding, quote, "This is not fundamental, unlike freedom of speech or freedom of religion," end quote. Now, of course, Chief Justice Roberts said that the right to self-protection is just as important as the right to free speech. So this guy's countering him. Not a good idea, Chief Justice. And you're right, guns are designed to injure and kill. Defensively, when it comes to the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is not there for offensive natures. It's there for defensive natures. It's plain and clear. Any argument against it is a far reach by an absolutely idiotic moron that really doesn't deserve to be in front of the court arguing such a pathetic argument. Feldman appeared to have some allies on the court, including Justice Stephen Breyer. Mostly, though, he faced skeptical questions from justices whose primary focus seemed to be what route they would take to expand the Second Amendment. This is called incorporating the Second Amendment against the states. It has already happened to most of the rest of the Bill of Rights through the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause. The 14th Amendment declares that states can't, quote, deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. End quote. The case for incorporating the Second Amendment through the Due Process Clause is remarkably straightforward, said former Bush Administration Solicitor General Paul Clement, who argued on behalf of the NRA. The 14th Amendment also declares that, quote, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Now, an 1873 decision called the Slaughterhouse Case rendered this privileges or immunities clause toothless in the eyes of the court. Attorney Alan Gura, who won the 2008 D.C. versus Heller case, urged the court to expand the Second Amendment by overturning the 1873 decision. This is the guy who successfully argued the Heller case. This would restore power to the Privileges or Immunities Clause, a perspective that clearly worried justices from both sides of the ideological fence. What unenumerated rights would we be declaring? Said Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Just despicable scumbag who used to be the Chief Justice of the ACLU. Just an absolute pathetic justice. After Gura responded that, quote, it's impossible to give a full list of the unenumerated rights that might be protected by the Privileges and Immunity Clause, Justice Samuel Alito questioned whether these might extend as far as a right to contract, which in Supreme Court history is an excruciatingly controversial idea. Such a right would make it easier for businesses to do things like challenge minimum wage laws, just to name a few. So, that's what we're looking at, all of these arguments at the Supreme Court. Now, here's a couple of things that went on. Now, Scalia blatantly, he inquired, why are you asking us to overrule 140 years of prior law unless you are bucking for a place on some law school faculty? Now, Justice John Paul Stevens asked whether there would be a right to own a gun for self-defense without the Second Amendment. Well, Gura replied yes. It is just the right to have it at home, Stevens continued. Is it just the right to have it at home, Stevens continued, or the right to parade around the streets with a gun? And Gura didn't answer that question because the way it was phrased sucked. The right to parade around the streets with a gun. You know, people are parading around the streets in places like Phoenix, Arizona with AR-15s when the president comes. How about that? Justice Stephen Breyer, he opined that the right to bear arms is different from other provisions in the Bill of Rights because it involves a threat to human life. Now, what a goof for coming up with this. When it's free speech versus life, said Breyer, we very often decide in favor of life. Here, every case will be, on one side, guns, on the other side, human life. How, asked Breyer, are federal judges, rather than legislatures, supposed to carry this out? Because all the different words I want to call this guy right now as I pause. Because, dummy, the Second Amendment is about defense, not offense. There are no laws that allow people to go out and murder. That's against the law. But you can commit homicide, which is the taking of another life, when in defense of your life and safety for yourself or the loved ones or others around you, when in fear of imminent death or serious bodily injury from someone with ability, motive, and intent. How about that? Have you ever heard those words, that legal phraseology all combined into one? There, Breyer, dummy, and you sit on the highest bench in the court. And just the highest court in the land, you, I yada. Oh. He said the argument for applying the Second Amendment to states is remarkably straightforward. Now, Clement contended that the Second Amendment right to bear arms is a fundamental right that should limit state action, just as the First Amendment restricts limits on speech. Justice Anthony Kennedy and Stevens both observed that not every provision of the Bill of Rights is applied in its entirety to the states. Stevens noted that the court, for example, has not required unanimous jury verdicts in state criminal trials. Clement replied that the Sixth Amendment right to jury trial is a bit of an outliner because it involves questions of process. Now, defending Chicago's ban, again, lawyer Jim Feldman told the justice that firearms are unlike anything else designed to injure or kill. You remember that? In addition, he said, firearms are not essential to the concept of ordered liberty. Many democratic countries have rejected them entirely. So what he's trying to do is now go on the global scale, the world scale, the new world order of law, the European idea of guns, right? Doesn't work very well. We are not Europe. We are not behind the times. We are not so progressively stupid that we put everyone's liberty and safety at odds with their God-given right to self-defense. And who are you, you filthy, pathetic scumbags, to overrule the rule of God that we have the right to protect ourselves by whatever means we need to against the tyranny of individuals and governments? Who are you to think that you can overrule God's rule? You suck. Stay tuned, guys. More to come.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. Just one last little thing about this whole thing on McDonald versus Chicago. Now, we have Sonia Sotomayor, who has always had anti-gun views, question that in a nation structure or history, what in this nation structure or history makes the right to bear arms not fundamental enough to apply to the states? Seeming that she's leaning towards a good decision. All right, guys, we used to have the Lenman News Hour after this show. Now we have the Control Factor, and I'd like to welcome Don Rawmaker to the show. Don, how are you, man?
Bill, I'm doing great, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I apologize. I know that I was supposed to be here a little bit earlier, but I actually got some very interesting news first thing this morning, and that we've had to add to our show about some high-tech technology that was being sold on the black market by a CIA employees.
Okay, don't go spilling it too much. I want you to have everybody on 2A Radio with bated breath. Guys, I got to let you know, I have heard this show. Now, you also have Dr. John on, correct?
Okay. Dr. John Hall.
Dr. John Hall.
Right, and John is a anesthesiologist here in San Antonio, and he's actually written a book about this technology, and basically what we've done is taking the book and turned it into a radio show. And we're actually in the process of turning it into a full-length motion picture.
Now, you've got to send me a copy of this book, man. I would love to read this because we have different people that send me emails or call up on the show, and we talk about this kind of stuff a little bit, but you guys are really into it. I listened to your show, almost the entire show on Monday, again yesterday, the first half of the show. I'll probably be listening. I'll get at least 15 to 20 minutes of it every day because I sit here and get my show uploaded onto my site, and I listen to what's going on while I do that. And I got to tell you, I dig your show, and I wanted to have you on to introduce 2A Radio to the Control Factor and try to encourage all of my listeners to stay tuned and listen to you guys as soon as they're done.
Bill, I appreciate it, and at least we know we've got one person listening to us, man.
You've got at least me, right?
I can't even get my family to listen to it because it scares them.
Well, Don, I know you got more to prep for the show. I just want to welcome you to the RBN family. I want to encourage everyone to listen. And for those of you who are listening to the show on the archives, please go look up the archives for the Control Factor and give them a shot. Give them a listen. These guys are really good. Don, I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you, buddy, for having me on.
All right, man. Have a great show. We'll be talking soon.
All right. Thanks.
All right, guys, that is Don Rawmaker. He's also got Dr. John on with him. And again, they talk, it's the Control Factor. It's not a conspiracy theory type of deal. It's really about information they've got about real stuff that goes on, especially with all of the garbage coming out of the federal government. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thanks for spending your morning with me. Stay tuned for the Control Factor coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will Your Freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.